So I'd like to introduce our first speaker, Anya Lorimer. Anya has over 25 years' experience in design, marketing and communications. Anya has created her own media channels, including Territory Q and Territory Taste Magazine, One Talk Technology Products, which specialise in Indigenous audio communication. Anya is a director of the creative partnership campaign Edge Sprout in Darwin and is excited about bringing the Territory's full first service agency to a local audience. So please welcome Anya to further talk about securing the future through her creative partnerships.
Okay, I actually did a little bit of homework because this is actually a pretty big topic for me, and it's the first time I've actually spoken about it in public, so bear with me. But after 19 years of flying solo, and a lot of people know that sort of story, I've touched the bottom of the pool, you've probably heard that story too. But why would someone like me want to share my train set? And I'm presenting today as, and I really need you to keep this top of mind, as I'm a creative that is in business. I'm not a business person that is in a company that knows P&Ls and KPIs and enjoys acronyms of any level. So that's just not my thing. I'm in the creative space. And I'm talking today about partnerships, which are not for the faint-hearted. There are pros and cons, and I've explored many options, including the very real possibility of having to shut the doors and switch off the lights when I was 90 days from insolvency, which is really scary. Claire tonight is going to talk about the need to change and how important that is. And I had to turn things around or risk losing my house, and I know what that feels like. Claire also knows, and she'll talk about how transformation's messy, and believe me, she went through a lot of that with me as my business coach. But when you enter into a partnership, it can be messy as well if you don't get it right and have the right intentions from the beginning. And for someone like me that is headstrong, bolshy, I'd only ever had to be accountable to myself. I'd have management meetings with myself. I'd go, I can justify spending that. I need a new, handbag / computer briefcase. I could do all of those things because I could. That all changed. And as an incredibly independent person, partnerships can be really scary. But I first started exploring partnerships after going through the experience of Shark Tank. And that was the single most horrific experience I've ever been through, but it also was the pivotal change in my career. And because previously to that, I'd actually been approached on three separate occasions to purchase Sprout as a company in its entirety, and twice by the same people. So this had happened over, I've had Sprout for 19 years, so this had happened twice over that, or three times over that time, but twice by the same people. And we actually got to due diligence once, and there was $1 million sitting on the table, and that is pretty tempting when you're sitting at the sleepless nights and for all the reasons that you can't switch things off. But with that money also came a long list of KPIs, targets, conditions, 5 years worth of return of service for something that I'd built that I then didn't own. And all three times I said thanks, but no thanks. The deciding factor at that point was actually the last time was because I'd started TQ and I couldn't actually put my finger on potential and what potential was worth. So I've started this new thing. It feels good. There was nothing in the market for it. It was the connector for business. And I thought, how do I put a price on that? There are only two ways that was going to play out. Either I was going to undersell myself or my new business partners were going to pay too much and feel ripped off. Either way, it was never going to be a win-win. So, even looking at that whole situation was going to go to custard. It wasn't until I learnt the exercise in working out the real value of a business and that partnerships can actually work. And this was through the whole Shark Tank experience. But the biggest thing through that was working out that the experience partners bring is better than capital because it's ongoing. you may have a cash injection, but you are walking out with just that money. And what these guys were bringing was different. And I had to go back to the pain points about why I was even looking for a partnership. And for me, that was inexperience. I was a creative designer who ended up in business. I couldn't even balance my personal credit card, and I was managing as a single mum with pretty much no idea what I was doing. I knew design, and that was pretty much it. After 14 years of winging it, we had pretty impressive achievements and Gruen trophies and all sorts of national awards and things, but we'd grown from two people in a shed in Winnelli. I knew how to gear up, but I certainly didn't know how to gear down. And when things got tight, I really didn't know what I was doing. It's easy to run a business when times are good. I'd never dreamed of going into business. I have no formal business qualifications, and I couldn't even read a P&L. And I actually employed someone to do that, so I thought that was their job. And I paid them a lot because that was their job. That was the big mistake. But I'm a director of an advertising agency on the outside. That was like the best job in the world for someone like me. But reality is the head wreck of dealing with staff and most days it's more drama than home and away. Banks, finances, constant demands on my time that you just can't shut off. Family didn't really get a look in, and holidays were non-existent. I didn't have a break really for 10 years. Dealing with the next gen entitlements also drove me nuts. I had 2 weeks maternity leave, and I thought that was okay. I coped. And you're sort of going, holy shit, you're already precious. But I've learnt it and I've earned it. I did manage, and I've skinned my knees, and in the back of my mind there was always my mum's words that said, there's the hard way, the easy way, and Anya's way. And it was my train set. I'd built it. But the other big factor was my health. Those that have known me, I took a couple of years ago, I had a pretty big health scare with a diagnosis of secondary hypertension, and I really had to get that under control. So here I was, pretty unhealthy, facing long-term medical solution to high blood pressure and things like that. So I really needed to get myself out of the way and get everything back under control. And finding a business partner to me seemed like the exact answer for what I was looking for. I'd had to experience and transform my view of business directorship in order to graduate to partnership level. I had to find my lane, stick to it, and look to people who could complement my areas of weakness. To do that, I had to accept what my weaknesses were. And in business, that is so totally empowering. When you actually embrace the things that you're really crap at, we did an exercise actually when we were away at a professional business women. I said, I want you to write your crap list because that's what you can actually work on. The other things you do well, you don't have to worry about those because you already do those well, but really work on your crap list. So I did that for myself. And through coaching, I became really aware that realisation is your strength. I got my health under control, started exercising and put myself first. I describe myself as dyslexic, creative and an extroverted introvert who is not into titles or being judged, and I'm a bit of a risk taker. But when you explore partnerships, there are 5 advantages to partnerships that I've found. These are like textbook stuff, but you know, 2 heads are better than 1. There's more capital available for your business, you have greater borrowing capacity, high caliber staff are attracted because of the progression opportunities within your business, and it's easier to change the legal structure later if situations change. The disadvantages are mainly around the legal and the liability, and they come into it with the liability of partners and debts. They also come into it with liability of behaviour of your other partners and conduct on others' part. So you really want to know who you're getting into business with. But there's also the risk of disagreements and fraction amongst them. But if the other thing is if joint partners leave or if they bring other people in, you've got to go through evaluation process, and these sorts of things can be timely and costly and all that sort of stuff as well. But with my new Shark Tank Survivor Confidence, I set out to find a business partner for my core business. And I had an appetite for growth, I always have. To find a business partner that clicks personally and professionally is not easy. And there isn't a Tinder app for that. There isn't a, you know, algorithm that just matches up businesses with personalities, with people. But that's actually a really good business idea. Claire and I were talking about that earlier. But our industry is also, because I'm in the communications, the advertising space, it's also one of the fastest changing platforms that there are. The introduction of web, email, digital advertising and social media has all happened since I left school. And the majority of that has happened in the last 19 years since I've actually been in business. And to stay relevant, we've had to reinvent ourselves so many times, it's not funny. If I actually look at the business that I first started and the business plan that I first did, it is absolutely hilarious. But you'd have to be a mushroom if you didn't think that the trajectory of business isn't going towards digital and the insatiable appetite for digital content. So it's how we communicate, it's how we communicate already. To keep up with the requirements of my clients, we needed to get a cost-effective digital content down, but keep the quality and the absolutely embrace the genius of the creative thinking. I'll be interested to see where some of the social media influencers are going to be in a couple of years, because just recently Instagram and Facebook have already depowered them by taking away their likes. So now all of a sudden you are back in the space of being paid reach. So organic stuff is becoming less and less because the algorithms behind those things are to actually generate money for the organisations and the platforms they are. And a lot of digital marketing at the moment is being driven from developers and coders and not so much creatives. And I believe this will change as it did with the web, but it means that we have to understand the medium and the transition and the creative and the effectiveness of advertising principles within a new space. So my target for a business partner became someone that was already better at business, bigger at business, had a serious solid bottom line, and they knew how to operate in the digital content space. It's pretty easy with my Tinder app. But it so happened that the company that tried to buy me out twice was exactly the company that I needed. It was February 2018 and I picked up the phone and said, I know we've been around the block with this. How about we discuss a partnership and not an acquisition? The next week, I had one of the directors in Darwin, and then 6 months later, we shook hands on our deal. Cutting Edge Group is worth over $70 million, has three directors in their early 50s. They're not very cool either, but they are also the biggest post-production company in Australia. 4 years ago, they created Campaign Edge, who has Dee Madigan as the creative director, and they've been on an acquisition plan ever since. So they buy up talent, they acquire companies like ours, they leave the directors in place, and we all work as a bigger group. The model is absolutely amazing. And my business partners I've actually known for 20 years. So the entire time I've been in business, actually just a bit before. So the important thing for me was that I'm still the largest shareholder of Campaign Edge Sprout, and it is an NT-registered business. I'm a director and a long-term territorian, and I'm pitching for growth and progress all the time. In 12 months, we've targeted upgrades that I wanted, and since the partnership, I now have Eddie, who's in the room tonight, who's with digital. He's a motion graphics designer. We've got Steve, who's a videographer and editor, and Christy's being upskilled into animation. And we were having a really weird talk in the office the other day about UX training or some, you know, whatever. But the designers are full-time with a staff of digital outcome here in Darwin. It's going to be a really amazing thing for us to have. We've built an edit suite, we've got the photographic studio, and they've actually invested over $150,000 in hardware upgrades and equipment. And all of this I couldn't have done on my own, and particularly in the current market. So they're all really obvious things about partnerships. But we've successfully future-proofed the business, which I didn't actually think about at the time, because there are no other designers in the group. So we get funneled all the work from Sydney and Melbourne and Brisbane. There is an office in Tokyo as well, but we haven't had anything from there, not yet. But this means that the designers that we have in Darwin are actually working on LinkedIn. They're working on national and international clients with Wildlife Australia and SDA and ALDA and some of these really amazing things. And their careers are moving forward with the latest tech, but it's happening right here. So I guess that sort of embodies the whole concept of the boundless possible, because I don't know any designer that... It would be so marginal that you would be able to work on those amazing campaigns in the big cities, because you have to seriously be in that tiny little lane. The other thing that's had a positive impact is that my confidence has gone through the roof. So with the backing of this company, I've been able to actually go after larger clients, big clients. So we landed Defence Housing. I don't like acronyms, so... Defence Housing, and we also just brought Dale Motor Group back to the Northern Territory. So they were being serviced out of Queensland, and that's exciting in itself because it's a new business for the Territory. We're not cannibalising our own market, and we're bringing new work back. But there is no way I would have gone after those type of clients that have got 13 car badges if I didn't have the support. And maybe it's like taking a sugar pill or something, you just feel like you can be a bit more superhuman, but none of that's got in our way, which has been really exciting. And they're the wins that I didn't sort of expect. And also the benefits for staff nationally working in the group have been really amazing. But probably one of the biggest things is the human connection that I get. So spitballing ideas with Dee Madigan, is just a phone call away for me, and I have really craved having that creative connection with me since I actually came here in 1995. I've got a CFO who is one of the directors, and I think he was raised by koalas. We were talking about this earlier, and he wants to just hug you and make sure that you've got, you know, you're okay and you feel supported, and you're just like, Matt, don't talk numbers, I don't want to talk about numbers. But he's really, really gorgeous and supportive. And my other two directors are machines. So campaign, cutting edge, you can go and Google them after this, but they did all the special effects on The Great Gatsby, Happy Feet. They've brought gems to your lounge room like MAFS, Survivor, Big Brother, Love Island. They're a big company. But through my partnership, there's scope for me at the big table as well. And Lizzie is going to talk about succession planning tonight. So when I start talking with these guys, it starts getting a little bit scary. But my feet are very much under the table, and I feel really comfortable being part of that group. So my partnership might be new, but it's been formed on 20 years of foundations because I've known these guys. But in closing, I would like to just say my partnership is full of loud, robust discussion about creative production and pushing new boundaries, is injected with financial stability, and I future-proofed my business, and I've found a new confidence. And it's like being invited to the board of a really successful business and actually feeling like you belong there, which is really exciting for me. And I look back now at the management meetings I was having with myself, the sleepless nights, overwhelmed, no one to share the pain or celebrate the wins was probably the sad part of a lot of that stuff when you go home. And after 20 years as a sole director, it's like the sound of one hand clapping, which can be pretty deadly silent at times. And partnerships are not for everyone. I went into it with the right intention. I took the time to research. I did my due diligence and I handpicked my partners. I actually thought I'd be working 4 days a week, I'd be learning how to play golf, and I'd be, you know, having these amazing holidays and long weekends. But if anything, I'm working 6 days a week. I'm taking on bigger clients, and I'm trying to bite off the next biggest thing that's coming my way. But if there is a book that I can just get you to read, it is Who Moved My Cheese, because my cheese has moved many, many, many times in my career. But I'm pretty sure that I just got into a partnership with a whole cheese factory. So I'm pretty excited about the future proof of my business through partnership. That's me. there any direct questions for me? I'm going to be on the panel later, but if there are, if not, I'm off the hook.
Thanks, Anya. All right, I'd like to now invite to the stage Rachel Beaumont-Smith from Darwin Harbour Cruises. Rachel is the General Manager of Darwin Harbour Cruises with over 23 years' experience in the tourism sector and is a valued member of the Tourism Top End Executive Team. Please welcome Rachel to talk further about future-proofing the business.
Thanks, folks. It's quite funny, so I can't use the quote about who moved my cheese. I can't do a lot of the quotes, but it's amazing to step up behind someone like Anya, who I've respected for a number of years, and how we do strive in Darwin business. So thanks, Anya. For those of you who I haven't had the pleasure of meeting yet, thank you for the introduction, Angela. My name is Rachel Beaumont-Smith. We started a crazy little harbour cruise business in 1996 over a very good bottle of red wine, and decided with my mother, my father, and my now husband that we have all the things that we need to start a harbour cruise business. Dad skipper, me travel agent, husband engineer, mum backup support. So what was a very simple plan back then grew into the Northern Territories, and I can say the Northern Territory because we've got the only harbour, so I can say the Northern, not Darwin, the Northern Territory's largest harbour cruise business. In the heyday, we were operating three vessels. We were taking 32,000 people a year out on the harbour. We were enjoyed the lovely numbers that were coming in from Kakadu National Park, from our international visitation. And so I'm going to speak about today. I feel like we should be debating. I didn't go partnership. We went full acquisition. So to give you a bit of a background, very different situation. It's really interesting. I really found Anya's chat a little bit interesting, because the biggest difference for us is that we were a family business. And I know there are so many amazing family businesses in Darwin. So the succession plan of a family business is very, very different from a sole trader. At some point, I am sure, in this 23-year journey, I was like, please let me be the only director in this. To work with your husband and your father for 22 years, I should be getting like a Brownlow or something, because I tell you what, and I know there's people in the room who are in family businesses, and you become a very patient person. Anyway, it was wonderful, every single moment of it. So when there are a lot of things, and you guys have been in business in Darwin, it wasn't as great 3 or 4 years ago as it was 10 or 15 years ago. We were having a look at situations where tourism was so affected by every time an airline stopped or every time there was a bit of a dip. We were really not that future-proofed. One of the greatest decisions we made from day dot, even in a family business, is that it was structured, there was strategy, and we had a set of rules of what to do if someone wants to bail out. What do we do when we want to have a different approach to our lives? So that was something that was incredibly important for us. So when these limitations started coming in, one of the biggest factors is that there were different expectations of family members. My father and mum are in their mid-70s. They were like, see ya, I don't want to do it anymore. I'm a workaholic. I'm like, I want to do this forever, but just not with you. And so that, husband is like, never want to see another passenger in my life. And I'm like, well, what do we do? How do we go? There was burnout. People who take harbour cruises for 23 years don't want to do harbour cruises for another 23 years. I had the joy of being in the office. I don't have to answer the question of, is that it for sunset? Like, so understood it completely. The other more serious part of it is that when you're in a family business with differing expectations of what you want to do, you then make a decision of how do you grow a business? And from Angela at the NAB, you either have to invest more capital or you have to decide to de-invest some capital in there. Now, for a growth trajectory in tourism, you have to pile more money in to get bigger. Vessels, and I love, Angela and I have had this conversation a couple of times. What do you think a bank manager wants to lend money on? A big floating depreciating asset that needs to be fixed a lot every year. So you either get bigger, you need a lot of money, or you say, well, let's start pulling back a little bit. When we decided to sell the business, enough was enough. We've had these conversations like, it's amazing, you wanted to sell the business and you were out. Lucky you. It's like, this is a four-year process. This was a very long four-year process. I just look back and say, we were so fortunate that we had this strategy in place. We decided that every business decision that we would ever make was on a very clear set of rules. We do this. Because I don't know if you've ever decided of things with a lot of money in family. It's like, but I didn't say that. And so we had this very clear, almost unwavering decision of and a plan of attack. So when we decided to sell, we did it in a couple of ways. The first and most important thing is that, and I have a couple of really, really good mentors, and I know some of you in the room would know Mr. Mick Burns, and I choose the really tough business mentors. And I go to Mick, and I'm sure he won't mind me sharing this with you. Mick, I want to sell your business. And he said, why the do you want to do that? And I'm like, well, and he said, terrible time, don't do it. And I said, well, you know, this is the point. And he said, well, why didn't you sell it these years ago? And I said, I don't know. And he goes, because you're dumb. People want to sell their business when no one wants to sell your business when it's really great. Everyone wants to sell the business when it's not so great. Hang on, wait. And I'm like, well, that's not going to happen. But what we did do is spend 3 consecutive financial years ensuring that our books were spotless, that every single time we would go through due diligence, it would be, there it is. For those of you who are in family businesses and buy very beautiful computer bags for their business, understand that when you are wanting to sell to a very large corporation, they don't want to see that. They want to see lean and clean. I feel really embarrassed saying that. I am the nerdy P&L, EBITDA kind of person. I wish I was more creative. I am not. But that was my thing. I wanted to make our business look as incredible as possible. And sometimes a little bit hard when the tourist season hasn't been going so well. But we did it. So we had a very clear strategy. I didn't want to get someone else to be an agent for my business. I've got a sales background. I thought I knew my business better than our business, more than anyone else. So I thought that no one would be able to do as good a job as us to sell it. And I think, don't shy away from that. This is, you know your business and you know your stuff. We strategized and narrowed down what we thought either the individual or the company who would want to buy our business. There's no point in me putting on a buy, swap, sell ad. Please, sir, buy these 3 big boats that are, you know, carrying 30,000 people a year. So we pretty much came up with, we want a high growth Australian, hopefully Northern Territory, there's not a lot of them, high growth acquisition based tourism business that had a very good level of experience in marine businesses. It's pretty narrow. It's very narrow. So targeted a couple of different Australian companies that we were proud to, you know, this is something, our baby that we'd invested for the last 23 years. We engaged with our accountant a lot. You've got to love your accountant when you're selling your business, like really love your accountant, use them, get your books sweet, be ready for many, many questions. And we basically targeted and sold our sizzle. Why is it a good match? And we changed the match depending on who we were talking to. We would say, you should buy our business because of this. This is how it fits in. We researched the other companies. We knew what the businesses that had. We knew how quickly that they were buying businesses. We knew that there was a connection with the Northern Territory. So we did We were very fortunate. So after 3 years of looking and strategising, we signed a deal in February this year with a company called Journey Beyond. And Journey Beyond is in a very fast acquisition stage. It has the GAN coming into Darwin, and the sales point for us was you have many passengers arriving in Darwin. You could put them on your harbour cruise. We knew that they were acquiring businesses. We knew that they had an interest in the Northern Territory. And we knew that they had an interest in employees in the Northern Territory. So we aggressively sold our sizzle to a company like Journey Beyond. Journey Beyond, at the end of this year, will be turning over $300 million. They have 1,200 employees. They own Cruise with Sundays in Airlie Beach. They have the GAN. They have the Indian Pacific. They have the Great Southern. This week, they bought Outback Spirit, which is one of the largest touring companies in Australia. They own Eureka Skydeck in Melbourne. The list goes on. And I got like a kid in a candy store. I was like, and they're like, well... And I'm like, well, would I? This is the question. Are you a part of it? Do you hand your baby off? Do you want to be a part of it? Everyone else in the family was going, ripper, see ya. And I was really torn. I wanted to be a part of it, but I took the opportunity. I thought the best thing for my career at the time, and I still do, is to join this amazing business. The reason why tourism businesses in this day and age, I feel like I'm just copying your script here, is that it is one of the highest, I had the fastest growing, changing businesses. And when we started, we had a big fat restaurant diary and a pen, and we'd take phone calls. I think some of the people in the room who used to ring, can we book a cruise? Now something like 80% of our business is booked online. We have the most aggressive digital marketing campaigns in the tourism space. We were the biggest company, Darwin Harbour Cruises previously, that didn't have a sales office, that didn't have international business development managers overseas and interstate. There wasn't a way, even if we probably had a lot more money and invested a lot more money, would be able to do the things that a company like that can do. And I think when we start looking at securing our future, I think I kind of read the notes a little bit different because I didn't want to secure the future of Darwin Harbour Cruises. We wanted to secure the future of our families and our two families. This business had done its dash for us. It had provided an amazing 23 years. You can say now it was an amazing 23 years. That rocking in the corner, how am I going to pay the bills? It would be great if there were more than three international tourists a year coming into the Northern Territory. So we really were... The emotional part of it was separate for us. We said, that's fine. But the emotional part for me was that I have the opportunity to work for a pretty incredible business. So it means that there's a bigger place for this company in the Northern Territory. It means that there's be a bigger base for the train and the horizontal falls coming in from the Kimberleys and with a really new acquisition of Outback Spirit Tours. So that's our story. It is a little different with a lot of similarities of how you move on and what do you do with the beast that you invest so much time and so much effort and so many mortgages. And so it's a, you know, there are lots of options. And that's it from me. Mine was a one-pager. I didn't do so much homework, so...
So a couple of quotes that I'm already loving from Anya and Rachel is, are you ready to share your train set? And love your accountant. Love it. All right. So thank you again, Rachel. I'd now like to invite Lizzie Wigg from Wigg Plumbing. Doesn't she look fabulous? Lizzie Wigg is the co-director and business manager of Wigg Plumbing, a youngest daughter of the founders, Graham and Shirley Wigg. Shelley Wigg. Lizzie, her husband Mick and their business partner Mitch began their succession planning 3 years ago, which came to fruition on the 1st of July 2017. So get you to present further on.
Hello everyone, and thank you for coming tonight. I've been preparing for about a month. So I hope that it's a decent enough speech. So I'm here tonight to talk about securing your future and I guess go through our experience of succession planning and doing our best to survive the current downturn in the economy that we're at the moment. We're a second generation family business that has grown over 39 years. So we're doing our best to ensure that Wig Plumbing is an ongoing entity going into the future. So just a bit of background about myself. I'm 26 years old, co-director and business manager of Wig Plumbing, recently married to my business partner, Mick, and we have a cheeky little two-year-old Jordan in the corner there. Michael and I are born and bred and raised Darwinites, so we know a lot about Darwin and know a lot of the businesses and have really loved growing up in Darwin and being a part of the Darwin community, basically. So a bit of a background about Wig Plumbing and the beginnings of it all. Mum moved to Darwin from Perth when she was 10 years old with her parents. They came up to Darwin for work. Dad was a little bit later when he was in his 20s, like most local Darwinite stories. He started caravanning around Australia and got to Darwin and never left. And as fate would have it, they met in 1982 at the launch of the Caroma dual flush toilet system. So it was meant to be. It was love at first flush for Mum. But it took a couple of years for Dad to get his shit together. But when he finally decided to ask her on a date, they hit it off, and in 1986, they welcomed their first baby girl, Rebecca, my elder sister. After Beck was born, Mum left her family business and came to help Dad in their now family business. With one young child, she worked full-time and helped Dad to grow the business and to get it moving along. A couple more years later, they welcomed another baby girl, and same thing, continued to work full-time and to grow the business. And in 1993, I was quite literally born into the business. Third child, old news, Mum was in labour, Dad was on the phone taking jobs. So, born into the business. As a mum myself now, running a family business, I truly admire my mum and my grandmother. It is incredible being able to successfully run a business and run a household and raise one for me so far, and try and work through and juggle everything that is family business. So I just hope that I can follow in their footsteps and make it through without my husband leaving me from whining about it so much. So as most family businesses will know, my first career began in the family business. It's not considered slave labour when it's a family business and you're little. But my first official work was at Wendy's at Nightcliffe when I was 14, and that's where I learnt how important it is to be on time. As a part of the Wig family, being on time is not one of our very good traits. From there, I followed my sisters to working in hospitality at the Darwin Turf Club, and that was really fun. That was a great experience, waitressing there. The environment and the atmosphere, everyone was so happy, and it was lots of fun. And from then, I went to work at Ken's Crepes on Sundays, and then I got promoted to Saturdays at Perap. And then I got the big time promoted to middle markets. That was cool. But as I got towards the end of my schooling years, I followed in my sister Sammy's footsteps and went to boarding school for 11 and 12. Anyone considering sending their kids to boarding school, do it. It is the best experience for kids. I absolutely loved it, and I really got to experience what life was like outside of Darwin and broaden my horizons and make some really beautiful lifelong friendships. Unfortunately, when I was in year 12, we had a family tragedy. So finishing off school, I didn't really want to go to uni. I didn't know what I wanted to do. So I just wanted to come home and be with family. So I finished year 12 in 2010, and 2011 came home and started working for the family business. Fumbling my way through, learning the ropes, my elder sister told me to pursue beauty therapy because I had a little bit of a love for playing with hair and makeup. So in 2012, I worked part-time and dabbled in beauty therapy and did my Cert 3 and Cert 4 in beauty therapy, but I just didn't find the passion in that. I just didn't have the complete devoted love to it that you need to have in an industry like that. So the universe pulled me back into the family business, and I continued to thrive in that arena. In 2014, at the age of 21, Dad had a project that he wanted to manage. He wanted to build some sheds in Winnelli. So he got together a group of us, a management team of 5 people, to manage the business, to continue the growth and to continue the management while he stepped aside to manage the development of his sheds. And out of those 5 people, I was one of them in the management team. So over that 2-year period, we learned the ins and the outs of the business, the importance of cash flow, the importance of staying on top of things, communication, customer service, all that sort of stuff. And by the end of his project in 2016, he kind of just didn't really come back to work. So we were managing this business and running the day-to-day, and he was stepping in and pointing his finger and telling us how to do it and then stepping back out. And so we then, at the recommendation of a really good friend in business, got advice to go through a federally government-funded grant called the Entrepreneurs Growth Program, which is where we got connected with a business consulting firm, Treaty, which is Claire. So we began that process, and that really helped us to bring together what was required to bring the business into the 21st century and help it to continue to grow, but also to really extract out of Dad what the core elements of the business were and what had made it so successful over 30 years to help to continue to push that success into the future. So about 6 months in, we brought Dad in, and he'd met Claire and Megan previously, but we brought him into the fold to discuss, you know, the future of what we were wanting to do and potentially purchasing the business. And Dad looked Claire dead straight in the eyes and goes, "It's all just brainwashy stuff, but have fun with it." And Claire was a bit gobsmacked, and I was horrified. But anyway, he said, "Have fun," so we did. So we kept on going, and we established and changed and made a few changes and kept on going. And 6 months into that process, we decided to buy the business. And I said to Dad, probably over a family dinner one night, "We're going to buy the business off you, Dad." And his response was, "Righto, sort it out." So in mid-2016, at 23 years old, I was managing the sale of a business, the purchase of the business, the emergence of a partnership with myself, Michael, and Mitch, creating a new company, managing a business, and I fell pregnant. And I gave myself a 12-month deadline. Not a recipe for disaster at all. So there was to's and fro's and negotiations here, and of course Dad, with all of everything that he'd put into the business, blood, sweat and tears, 30 years, he said, "My business is worth this much." And our accountant said, "Well, it's actually worth maybe this much." So to's and fro's, but like all good business deals, we, in the workshop, over a beer, came to a decision. So on the 1st of July 2017, Chocolate Gold, trading as Wig Plumbing, was born, and we took over as the business owners. And on the 11th of August 2017, Jordan was born. And it was busy times. Looking back now, 2017, I think it was a really pivotal time for us to step in and for Dad to step out. With the decline of Darwin and the economy, It's been extremely difficult. It's been extremely a massive learning curve for all of us. But in business, like I think Anya said, when you are in business and times are good, it's generally pretty straightforward. But when you're in business and times are hard is where you really learn your lessons. And so this has been, I think, you know, a great time for us to take over, to really learn what it means to be in business and to learn what's necessary in business. So the recent economy has brought on some challenges for us, things like cash flow, staff, dealing with banks, organising jobs with customers who, you know, you don't know if your customers are in good times or bad times. So managing the risk of projects without the chance of not getting paid for that work. Yeah, and just trying to stay positive through it all. It can definitely make you feel shaky during that period. So I guess for us, we've had to make some really big business decisions in the last couple of months. My accountant said you need to reduce your staff and probably by one. And we as a group decided that we didn't want to do that. We have a really good team at the moment, and we've worked hard to really create a good team. You know, we've worked hard to build our culture in our workplace. So we decided instead that as directors we would take pay cuts. So that's been really challenging, but I think in the long term it will definitely pay off. You know, having to train staff is a cost in itself, and trying to find really good staff is so difficult in Darwin. Again, staff retention is so difficult. We find that every 2 years we've got a new lot of staff. Everyone seems to come up, stay in Darwin for 2 years, and then go back where they've come from. So we've really invested in our company culture. We've got a social club. We offer as much flexibility as we possibly can. We provide a friendly work environment. We have a Wednesday morning toolbox, and we provide breakfast for that. For cash flow and to try and reduce risk on larger projects, we require deposits where possible because, you know, if they do fall over or if the project doesn't come to fruition to complete or if anything happens, we just really need to make sure that we at least get something to cover our costs. So I guess in summary, looking forward, we're just really trying to remain positive and doing as much as possible to mitigate risk and to maintain, I guess, the business acumen and the business success that Dad worked so hard to establish in Darwin and to grow. So that's about it from me.
Thank you. Thanks, Lizzie. And again, some great learnings there, and good little snippets there with your Wednesday morning toolbox, and the power of good governance meetings in the shed with a beer. That's the way to do the business. All right. So now our final presenter. I'd like to introduce Claire Marandini. Said that right? From Treaty Business Consulting. Claire has an extensive business background and is a well-respected leadership and business consultant. I'm going to do a plug here of the wonderful work she did with us doing a seminar with some of our small business owners in terms of the availability of the ASBAS program and the great initiatives that are out there for small business to take up. Claire's focus is on transforming organisational culture, leadership and management teams and individuals across a broad spectrum of companies and industries. A trained mediator with Dispute Resolution Branch, Department of Justice and Attorney General, Claire's also a qualified counsellor and DISC accredited, so you read Anya straight away with introvert, extrovert, NLP. NLP certified and has been a successful business owner herself. She is fulfilling a passion of transforming businesses. In a role, she's had the privilege of providing leadership and management training with a focus on business to teams of professionals, making a difference to industry and businesses across Australia. Please welcome Claire.
Thank you. Thank you, Angela. Okay, so thank you very much, everyone, for spending Wednesday night to come and listen to all of our esteemed panel members talking tonight about surviving the downturn, securing your future. And tonight I'm going to talk a little bit about how to do business differently, doing things differently. So the thread that I guess that I want to share with everyone tonight, for me, doing business differently is about your people and a focus on culture. And Lizzie touched on a little bit before, it's something that we really embed with our private clients and any business owner actually, is the focus on your people and your culture. And if you can maintain that and some consistency around that, then you're going in a great direction to having a long-lasting organisation and surviving tough times. And there's, you know, having that real compassion for people that you work with and your stakeholders will put you in good stead. So my dad's a farmer, my mum's a nurse. I've got two children. They're 19 years old. I got pregnant with twins on my honeymoon. I have a hotel background, so that came to a grinding halt. I am amicably divorced. That's hence the mediator thing. I didn't do that for work. I did that so I could not kill my ex-husband. And I'm in a wonderful new relationship. He's a teacher and a public servant, and I go home and try and boss him around. It doesn't go very well. And really, I guess I'm saying that because, yes, I have a story, but if we went round, if we passed the mic around, every one of you sitting in your chairs has a story. And all our stories are interesting, you know. It's all a fabric, particularly if you're involved in business. You know, we've all come from somewhere and done something, but I guess the common thread for me tonight with reaching out to you is that it came through adversity, is my business story. So 10 or 11 years, or longer than that ago, 15 years ago, our business and my marriage and my business collapsed at the same time. So I had two small children, you know, had to pull it together, and I went and did a lot of, I was qualified. So unlike Anya, I didn't have any creativity. Unlike Rachel, I didn't even know my accountant. I couldn't read a P&L to save my life. And unlike Lizzie, I wasn't a natural born entrepreneur. And like Lizzie, it just pumps through her veins. She's like the most talented businesswoman at the age of 26 that I've ever met. So I had to find what my strengths were, and I had to understand what my weaknesses were. So I knew that my weaknesses were lack of creativity and lack of financial understanding. And even though I'd actually had the pieces of paper around business, it actually meant jack shit in reality. You know, when you go through something that's traumatic in terms of losing all your assets. And so the silver lining to all of that is that survival kicks in, and you go and do a bit of self-development, and you start to take responsibility where you can take responsibility, and you focus on what's important, you know. So I could see that out of that came my purpose in life. And my purpose in life is to make a difference to people in business. And it's really, really important that when you're in business, you discover what your purpose is. And everyone who's spoken here tonight got on their journey, got crystal clear on why they get out of bed every day. And it's not about money. Rachel talked about it. It's not about the big paycheck at the end of the day, because it's not enough in the ebbs and flows of business. The big paycheck, or the end of the, oh, we're going to retire early, it's not enough to get you through the tough times. And once you get really clear on your purpose, the pathway opens up, like the universe aligns and opportunities start coming your way, and you start to become a little bit clearer about what your strengths are. And so for me, I've got clear about my strengths are leadership. My strengths are, I'm a people person, and I really love empowering people. So TREATY stands for, it's a mediation acronym, and it stands for trust, respect, empowerment, empathy, transparency, and integrity. So I started to embed that into my everyday business practice and started being there for people who were struggling in business. And 10 years later, we've experienced a whole lot of growth in the last 12 months. And I think Rachel said, you know, it was 4 years to get the sale done. You know, nothing happens overnight. You think, oh, you know, you're an overnight success. And you really hear about those actors and singers that say, you know, they're overnight successes. There's nothing, no such thing. It's not overnight. There's lots and lots of layers and practices and learnings and mistakes that happen for everybody along the way. So doing things differently, I think when I went around to my team, and I've been asking them the last couple of days, I'm like, oh, what do we do differently at Treaty? And it's actually, it's not that we do it differently, it's the basic principles done well, I think, that's made the difference for us in the last 10 years. So little things like, Anya read her speech to me last night, and she was talking about the head wreck of business, you know, the staff, the financials, the constant demands of business that business have. And I wrote it down because I'm like, I actually love that stuff. I love the constant head wreck of business. I love being in a room with business owners who are going through the ups and downs and the challenges. I love the fact that Graham Wigg told me that I was a brainwasher and that we'll just, yeah, go ahead and do it anyway and, you know, rave the red. And 6 months later, he took us all out on his fishing boat, so I figured I transformed him on some level as well. But that, like, understanding that it's got to transcend financial. Like, it was more important to Graham and Shelley that, you know, their lifetime that they had built up this reputation and, you know, this team and all his blood, sweat and tears was going to survive, that there was actually some kind of plan in place that would transition it to the next generation and potentially the next generation after that. So future-proofing something that his blood, sweat and tears went into meant a lot more than money. Treaty, we're also the implementation specialist came up. So, you know, really getting up underneath, creating a team that gets up underneath businesses and business owners and physically helps them. I didn't want to be another business coach, another consultant that just said, you know, you should be doing that. You know, why don't you, here, let me write you a report this thick that's going to be a really good dust collector and tell you all the things you should be doing. Because that's not, business owners know what they should be doing. It's like, how do they get to that? How do they get the extra resources required to do the things they know they need to do as industry specialists in their own field? How do they make that happen? How do they get themselves out of the way? And we talk about that a lot. Treaty is also an end-to-end service. So we not only are, we led the team to not only provide different services, like what do you need? Do you need recruitment? Do you need financial advice? Do you need, we don't give financial advice, by the way, that's against the law, but in terms of understanding how cash flow and, you know, where are the barometers, like, are you spending more than you're making, you know, that type of basic stuff that I missed when our business collapsed. I didn't realize that, you know, you got to pay attention to those things, otherwise you won't get very far. Where is it that you need support in your business, and then how can we help you get across the line in that particular area? So that diversity of advice, because there is a process that sits in the back end of business coaching and consulting, but you have to tailor it to the people sitting in front of you and how it applies to them, because every business is unique. Also, supporting end-to-end in terms of, is it a startup or is it a really advanced organisation that has 1,200 staff that needs, you know, is their culture, is there elements of the business that the culture is of? Like, what size business are we talking about and how do we support that? Because small business hires 80%, and I quote this a lot, of everyone that's employed in Australia. 80% of people are employed by small business. And it's a drum that I won't stop beating, because it is so important to realise that 80%, that we're the ones that pay the taxes, we're the ones that get the roads built, we're the ones that, you know, the new shopping centres and the airports and all of the really big ticket stuff is all underpinned by small business. So never, never underestimate how important you are in the economy in the bigger picture as a small business owner. Other areas that we do things different, we're structured, but not structured to the detriment of the organisation. In other words, we're agile. You know, there has to be processes and standard operating procedures, and, you know, we do that for a living, implementing that into other businesses, and we definitely have it for ourselves as well. But don't get yourself within an inch of your life where you're so structured that you can't move. You know, you've got to be able to make changes and do it quickly, and I've noticed that we've outmaneuvered our competition a couple of times because of that ability to make quick decisions and move on our feet and, you know, make things happen and take action and not wait to the next board meeting or not wait until, you know, it's too late. Constantly evolving as well, like, don't be afraid of change, embrace change, and everyone that's spoken tonight has embraced change on some level. There's a couple of key themes that you'll be picking out of everyone speaking, and each one of the speakers up here tonight, apart from the fact we're all women, go girls, is that everyone embraces change and evolves with what's happening. So in other words, if the economy's down, adjust to that. You know, take a pay cut. You know, think of different ways that's within range. I'm not suggesting that everyone goes out and take a pay cut, but just have a look at how you can adapt to the current circumstances and what your business is dealing with. The other thing is invest in training and your people. So that thread of your people and culture, invest in training. Do internal training, do external training, ask stakeholders to come and talk to your team, sit down and have weekly meetings with your team. It's really, really critical element to people feeling fulfilled. So there's another big statistic that I love to quote, and I think it's 70% of people leave their place of employment because they don't get on with the manager. It's not because they're not attracted to the organisational values, it's not because they think the business owner's not great, or it's not because they don't think, it's because they don't get on with the manager that you've got in place. So really critical that you're upskilling your managers all the time, and that you are, and if you don't have managers and if you're a smaller team and you're wearing lots of different hats, you're upskilling yourself. That's really, really important. Go on, put yourself on a training course. If you think, God, I really can't afford that $1,000 to go down to that training course, just take a risk, roll the dice and put yourself through it. You've got to be training yourself in order to be leading, to be able to see what's ahead of you in the turn. Because in business, it is a head wreck. There are lots of things coming at you all the time. So you need to be as agile and as present as you can be. The last thing on the list is partner and collaborate with your stakeholders. So when we finish here tonight, I'm heading into the Aiden NT Awards because they're a really important partner for Treaty. We do a lot of collaboration with Defence and they a lot of support. We do a lot of time, and it's not necessarily fee for service either. It's just an organisation. It's that we, like many organisations that we partner with, NAB is another one. Thank you, Angela, for the plug before. It's really important to spend time and develop partnerships with your stakeholders. It's really, really critical. And if you're not sure who your stakeholders are, sit down and write yourself a list of everybody that engages with your business. I think that's about it. I can't emphasise enough, I got clear about my strengths and my weaknesses, and definitely people and culture, and I really want to be leading from the front in that conversation. I want my organisation to be a demonstration of that. So happy to answer any questions that you may have. Is there anyone that would like to ask me anything right now, or we just want to jump straight to the panel? And just my very last thing, I would like to, in case we don't get the opportunity to, I'd like to thank our sponsors, NAB, and I'd really like to say a very warm welcome to, thank you to Caitlin and Jade. You put a lot of effort into tonight, so, and you've got an excellent turnout, so thank you so much for supporting the program, supporting us tonight. It's been an excellent thing event to be a part of, and I really appreciate it, and I think all the other speakers do as well. Thank you.
Can you say that? Hang on. All right. Thank you, Claire. So if I can get Claire, Anya, Rachel, lovely Lizzie. Stairs. Okay, our microphones are working. Yeah. You're going to give me some lights? Okay. All right, I have got some questions on our live Q&A, so I might kick off with one from here and then throw to the audience. And I think this one might work nicely with all of you because you've all experienced change, and Claire made a point of it, that to embrace change. But I'll throw it to the four of you. What got you here won't take you there. Has anyone experienced experienced changing strategies to engage new customers?
Oh, I can start because I stole Anya's microphone because she's going to say all the good stuff first. So if I go first.
Anya.
Look, one of the, absolutely, and we've all talked about very dynamic businesses that require us to be agile all the time. I think probably going to business management courses in the mid-90s, when you were born, that, you know, agility wasn't really a big thing, and with technology and with the changes of what we have, agility is a massive part. From Darwin Harbour Cruises' point of view, when we saw the changes in our international figures and our business really relied on markets that were not performing as well as they should have, we looked at the beautiful Darwin Convention Centre being built and the waterfront being built, and we absolutely changed our business model and bought a much larger boat and started with business events. And business events is a very lucrative part of the tourism business. It is in a very different season as our tourism business, and it allows us to utilise vessels at different times of the year. So that was a clear change in our strategy. So I think we kind of say we have this rule book and this set of rules, but absolutely what Claire was mentioning, you have to have the ability to change that and through different market conditions on that one.
All right, I'm going to jump in here really quickly. Claire knows I'm going to do this anyway. So I've got a microphone, I'll use it. No, one of the biggest things, and Rachel touched on this, is actually doing your research. So we looked at what opportunities were around that weren't being serviced from here, and we went after them. We looked at what we could improve. We jumped on a plane and went to Canberra and went and pitched our services to Defence Housing, and they must have thought, who the hell are these people from Darwin? But by the end of it, they were like, oh, well, we've got a new project coming up, but can you help us with this one? And I sort of turned on my heel and went, you'll have to pay us for that, and walked out the door. And it worked. So we ended up with a full account. It put $1 million back on our bottom line. That it was being a little bit bolshy, but it's also believing in yourself. And we knew that we had what they needed. And a little bit the same thing with DMG. We know that they could have been serviced so much better locally. We did our research. We knew where they were being serviced from. We knew, we had a look, we did our own sort of audit of their socials from afar. We had a look at what they were doing well and what we could definitely improve on and what we could offer, and we went in with the full pitch. And it landed the client. So nothing short of Gruen and knowing that Todd Sampson had never drunk a cup of coffee, I knew that when I pitched that whole thing at Gruen and we came home with a trophy. It literally was really knowing who you're talking to, what their triggers are, and absolutely backing yourself in.
Yeah, I so one way we mitigated was to go after some tenders, put tenders in for federal and state grants. And it's a strategy that it's been successful for us. We're at three federal tenders at the moment, and I'm pretty confident of a fourth before the year end. And it stabilises your cash flow. It means that, you know, your rent and your wages, you know that's covered. And and it's also a strategy that because our private clients, we are always a company where our private clients are going to be the most important thing to us. And so it's something that we've now got someone in the team that can provide that service to our private clients, and it's done the same thing for private clients. They're starting to win tenders, and they're starting to have their cash flow flattening out a little bit as well, which is, in these times, it makes a difference.
I guess for us, we were quite lucky that Dad had established the business and had quite a good customer base, but in the last couple of years we've seen quite a few new competitors come into the residential maintenance market. So that has meant that we've had to really have a look at the other services that we have and where we can really penetrate the markets in that. And I've actually been going around to businesses in Darwin and meeting with new people and trying to build up new relationships, or sort of touch on existing relationships that we hadn't actually met, to try and secure a future in maintaining that relationship. And it's really interesting going into other businesses and to meet with people and to try and figure out how you can assist them, but also with our specialising services with New Flow pipe relining, that's sort of an area that no one else really has the capabilities of providing in Darwin. So really reining in on that and finding customer bases, and like the girl said, doing research into what areas need that special niche and really penetrating that market.
Thank you, ladies. Some really valuable points there. Is there anyone from the floor that would like to ask a question? Here we go.
Hello. Okay, so the common theme was to address your weaknesses. So I'd like to know what steps you took or the methodology that you used.
I'll go first. Self-development. So go and do courses, read books, get yourself into a space of personal and professional development.
I just employ people better than myself. It's the smartest thing I've ever done.
That too.
No, I know exactly what my weaknesses are. And I've also done personal development and worked out personally where my weaknesses were, and I do work on those, a bit like going to the gym and building your muscles. But within the business itself, it is 100%. And I see my main role as a director is to make sure that they are empowered and set up for success, because they're the ones that do business with my clients every single day. And as long as I look after them, and there's like 10 of them, to the point that I'm actually driving out to Liania every morning and picking up my editor for TQ because he's had a hip reconstruction and he can't drive to work. But he physically can be there, he just can't get there. So I personally drive out every morning and pick him up. And I make soup for my staff if they're sick. We had a 30th in the office today. It is empowering the compassionate word of thank you, and using it is so much better. I used to do trips to Bali and all this crazy flashy stuff. That's not what they need. They actually just need someone that is going to support them and, like Claire was saying, get underneath them. But I totally employ people better than myself.
Thank you. I think when, going back to the question, I think one of our biggest faults as business owners is the identifying what the fault is and what your weakness is. And I think that absolutely having the ability to improve yourself is really good. It's really hard to do when you're on the phone with two small kids and trying to run a business that's not going so well. So it's very easy to sit up here and go, I just got a lot of self-help and did things like that. The reality is that once you've recognised it, that you really have to do something about it. You know, we see these businesses. I mean, a perfect example, which blows my mind, that I contacted a Darwin business on the 29th of August to do a quote for me. And it was a fairly substantial quote. It was a nice little earner. I got a response yesterday of, do you still need that quote? And it's like, yeah, because we're really busy. One of my pets hates. I hate it when people say, I'm so busy. Like, poor you. You know, this is what we do for a job. Get more people, get smarter people, get people around you who can fill the gaps. I think, imagine if there was just an offices of you and me there. It just would, you know, never work. Really recognising that you need some people who can read your, I mean, to not be able to read a P&L kind of, it makes me feel OCD, anxious. I would get very nervous if I didn't know exactly where the targets were. I'm goal-orientated, I'm achievement-oriented. I want to make that happen every time. There can't be 10 of me in the office. It would be really nasty. So, yeah, absolutely, having people around you to have different skills.
I guess I'm on the beginning of my journey, really.
You're so nice.
Yeah, I'm still rocking in the corner and not sleeping at night. Yeah, it's interesting, and it's great to hear from everyone else what you've done and where you're at with it. But I guess in my short time in business, it is find people smarter. I think, and you've just got to pay for it, unfortunately, most of the time. You've got to do self-development, or you've got to pay someone to do it for you. But you need support, and yeah, that's just, I guess
I've got to do both.
Yeah. Yes, Claire. but it is hard, and I, my hubby often tells me, stop yelling at me. And I'm a go, go, go. Like, I just want to get it done. And I wonder at times if that is to my own detriment, but I guess in time we'll see.
Research and plan. I think, you know, I think this is the best time to start a business because it's the really innovative, passionate, driven people that will do really, really well. I think there's opportunities everywhere. I could give you the name of what I was trying to get a quote for because there's a gap there. But I think that we, you just have to have that drive and passion and actually get it down on the plan. It has to be planned. I know that it's really difficult, but unless it's measurable, unless you're accountable for it, unless you can, you know, you're never going to get, you know, you can sit there and we said, we want to do a harbour cruise business. There was no plan to start off with. But we put it down, what we wanted to achieve, how long we wanted to take to do it, and we did it. And it, you know, we started with $400 each. I know it was 1996, so it's probably worth about $2 million, but, you know, it wasn't a lot of money. We didn't overcapitalise. We were really sensible. We used our figures every day, every day.
So, Rachel, there's a job as a business coach if you want one. She's absolutely right. You know, the very first thing we do with a new client is a five-year plan, and it's not necessarily a plan about the business, it's a plan about you, the owners. What do you want from an asset, income and lifestyle point of view in the next 5 years? And then what are your next 12 months objectives? So when you, the neurologically, that does something to your brain. So it lays the tracks in your mile and you start your filtering for your goals. So absolutely bang on, you've got to have a plan. And also there's another saying, the cream rises to the top. So if you're starting a business in a downturn, it's the absolute best time
for you to figure out where your shortfalls are, where the gaps are in the market, you know, what type of people you'd like to have working for you. It's the best time to start a business when things are a bit low, because when things pick up, because business is cyclic, so when the economy picks up, and it will pick up, you're already well ahead of where you need to be. It's not great starting in when things are really good and money's just flying out the door at you. It's way better to start in a time like now.
Yeah, I guess for us, having been so established and going through Dad, having the good times and now coming down, it's been a good experience to really see how we can pull back on things and how we can run a leaner company, what we can reduce our expenditure on. So I guess starting now, you would really learn how to run a business on bare bones and to really make the most of what you can offer. And also, there's so many businesses in Darwin who have been through the good times and have really enjoyed the ride, but are not potentially making the most of what their business can offer now in the downturn. Mm-hmm. You know, we had a hens night a couple of weekends ago, and the most organised person in the world organised it, and she had organised it a month in advance and then 2 weeks in advance and the day before. Everything was planned out. There was an agenda. There was times and dates. And every venue we went to was a hiccup. Everything was delayed. Things, even though it was planned, we didn't go to plan. So, yeah, I honestly think that if you are determined to get into business and if you have your plan and if it's something you really want to do, there's definitely still opportunity in Darwin to absolutely go for it.
I started Sprout in a downturn. So, and a lot of people used to say to me, like, what are you doing? You're crazy. And I was pretty much unemployable, but I was doing exactly what I wanted to do. And the one thing that I constantly said to people was, but I don't know anything else. It started tough. It stayed tough for a while, but I didn't know anything else. And I think as business owners, I've got a real bug about this, and you'll read it in my TQ Publishers letter, but we really need to talk business up. The more we talk it down, and it really frustrates me, I hear people talking down, you know, the things are tough and this is tough, and someone like me goes, oh, it's tough, maybe I won't buy that pair of shoes, or maybe I won't, and that's only hurting the bottom line of the person that might be actually saying things are tough. But I love the fact that I didn't know anything else. It's all I knew was that it was tough, and it was probably the best grounding to ever start a business, because you never expect it to be then good. Where the wheel fell off for me, I grew and grew and grew and grew and grew, started tough, but where it changed was when things started to get tough again, I didn't know how to gear down. And so that's when I got Claire in to actually reconfigure my business, look at the culture, change a whole lot of things. But when it was tough was probably where I was the most comfortable. And it's probably why I'm embracing things at the moment and looking at totally different ways of doing business in the current climate. And I said to someone the other day, it's pretty much natural attrition. So the good ones do rise to the top. And maybe the people that have had an easy ride may not have the right purpose or the heart or the right people or the right drive. I don't know what it is, but there's the tenacious territory resilience, I think, and it's in the room. You're all here tonight on a Wednesday night, but I've got that in bucket loads, and anyone starting a business has got that. But in a tough time, I think it's the best time.
Thank you, ladies. I've got one here from the live Q&A, and I'm loving the quote that it starts with. So Henry Ford once said, if I had asked people what they wanted, they would have said faster horses. So if your customer can't always tell you what they want, how do you anticipate it?
Anya?
You start with the end in mind. You go to them and say, what outcome do you want? Who are you talking to? And because you will actually, they will tell you the answer. It's just how you frame it up. So I guess you know you want faster horses. You know you want to, you know, whatever. But how do you get there? Business people will get there. You've just got to frame it up and take them with you. I always start with the end in mind. What is the outcome? Picture it, feel it, stand there, do it. And then the rest of it sort of fills in the gaps.
There's a really excellent quote by a fairly wealthy, fairly wealthy individual, Bill Gates, which surprisingly, and it's quite a famous idea, is that he never did market research, because his arrogance in the and his business tenacity dictated that they don't know what they want. We're going to tell them what they want. And I think that he had some pretty clever technicians behind him on that one. But for us, I think that, and Anya mentioned it earlier, that we in Darwin sometimes have, and it's a bit of a criticism, that this kind of silo or bubble that we kind of, and everyone does it, it's human nature to sort of just that lowest common denominator. You actually have to get out of this and travel overseas or travel to amazing parts of Australia, travel to where the industry that you're in is at its peak, and actually go look at some really great operators. And you know, if you're a business person and you are looking for that innovation, there will be product that will bubble to mind, I think.
Got a 16-year-old and people say, oh, what's she going to do when she finishes school? What's she going to do as a career? And I said, I don't know. I don't think her job's even invented yet. So what's going to happen in 3 years' time? Who knows? I don't know. I actually don't think her job is invented yet. She'll find it and she'll probably have 10 different careers. Like, it's all changed, like how things are. And even when she gets really worried about, what am I going to do, Mum? I'm like, oh, just go broad. Just do a Bachelor of Arts degree or nursing or teaching and travel the world, or just have, like, you're a Gen Z or whatever they are, I don't know. But I don't think their careers are invented yet. So, and that comes from, I guess, operating a business that has changed so much. And I love it when I talk to uni students and go, I started design when the first web page went live. And you could see them going, oh my God, how old are you?
And I had to explain to someone last 2 days ago, I was in a business course, what an overhead projector was. And I'm like, you know, like with transparency, what are they? Yeah, and you'll do this. And they're like, why didn't you use the computer? And I'm like, right.
I guess for us being in a trade-based business, just sticking to what Dad always did, and he did it extremely well, was communicating really well with your customer and really getting down to what they really wanted, especially and with three different areas. You know, we have the maintenance side, we have the plumbing side, and wastewater treatment systems and pipe relining, and every area and every customer brings their own challenge. So really finding out what they want, and like Anya said, finding out what the end goal is. So, you know, for our for any new homeowners or customers that live out rural, looking at whether to go septic or treatment system, and really nutting out what they want out of their home and their system and their garden, and how they really feel about the environment, because there is all those different aspects which can at the end of the day make the decision for them. And also a massive thing is budget. You know, there's no point saying go with this really awesome bathroom renovation if they can't actually afford to go down the road of getting a building permit, getting certifications. So communication and spending the time with them on site to really nut out what they want and what they need. So the face-to-face contact is invaluable. And I've definitely learnt that over the last 12 months, having to go out there and meet new people and really maintain and build new relationships is that communication and face-to-face contact.
Yeah, agreed with everything. Needs elicitation is the big thing.
like eliciting the needs of your clients and your stakeholders and having them just asking questions. And there's different levels of how to ask questions. And, you know, everyone on the panel here is quite skilled at that. But it's a good thing to show, a good tool in your tool belt to do is to learn how to ask questions of people to find out what they want.
Thank you. So, ladies and gentlemen, we have time for one last question. Is there anything from the floor? So, ladies, just maybe one last comment to our audience about the most important takeaway for the securing your future, if we could end on that note.
Keep your head up, stay positive, lean on your business friends. They've got your business friends are your biggest support, and your family. Your family is your biggest support. Stay positive, it's going to get better.
I know, I feel bad because I do have family members in the room and I haven't mentioned them like once. But so yeah, the given that your family is a huge support, for me, I cannot, the securing the future is the planning. You have to get it down. You have to have some type of strategy. I know, a bit OCD, sorry.
Probably the biggest thing for me and the biggest change that I've had to do is to actually love my P&L. So I went from, I wonder how the year went to almost monthly, like pulling the handle on a pin, like a poker machine, and going, have we got any money this month? To now I'm weekly and I'm moving to daily. So I have, because of my CFO Koala director, he has very comfortably moved me in a way, and like this is some really big future-proofing that's happened through my partnership, that they have just empowered me even more. And actually loving your figures for a creative person, that's like ripping off a band-aid, but I actually really love it. I'm in zero. I'm checking zero. I'm having a look at stream time. I'm like, but you wouldn't drag me in there before. But I actually, that's probably the biggest single change in my business confidence of having a real handle on what's going on, because I used to just think that wasn't my job. So that's probably my best advice, is love your numbers.
Thanks, Anya.
Yeah, so absolutely everything that's been mentioned, have a plan, stay positive, and get to love your numbers. And for me, I think it's also a couple of things like head down, tail up. Like just don't get too distracted what other people are doing. Just look at what's in front of you and put your head down and your tail up. And business is like, and the economy is a little bit like the stock market. You know, it can be all doom and gloom, and it's come up a couple of times tonight. Don't listen to that. Don't buy into that. Just look at what you can do to improve your own patch, and lean on people, like go and get support from people that you know are going to stay positive. So, thank you.
Thank you, ladies, for those wonderful reflections and insights. If I could get everyone to say thank you to our wonderful panellists tonight. And thank you for the last words of wisdom. My words were self-awareness that I learned from you. Self-awareness, people, culture, agile, self-development, the power of family, loving the numbers, being a geek is not bad, having a go, Uber Anya, picking up her CFO every morning. Ladies and gentlemen, so thank you again to Territory FM for the very generous prize tonight. Thank you all for coming and joining us this evening. Thank you to our panellists for their wonderful words of wisdom and sharing the insights and experience. It's invaluable. It's a wonderful thing about our town and what we share. Thank you to the Landmark for hosting us tonight, to our October Business Month sponsors and our event partners. Please hang around, enjoy the hospitality, network with each other, and we look forward to seeing you at future events.
Thank you.